Hello, and welcome back to the Edge and Flow podcast. It's early morning on a Friday. The shop is quiet. TJ Schwartz here. I'm here with Lucas Burnley. On this podcast, we talk about knife making, knife design, and a lot of creative and interesting things that lead us down rabbit holes. How you doing?
Doing good, man. I like this new recording time.
Yeah, me too.
Feels good. It feels like fresh start, and it's like end at kind of end of the week. A lot of like ideas rolling around, and I don't know, it just seems like a really easy time.
I just got to the bottom of a pretty big cup of coffee, and so yeah,
Yeah,
it's good timing.
I'm in my coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, things are good. First things first, we have a small announcement, which is pretty fun. Up until now, TJ and I have never had a guest on the pod. We have talked about it quite a bit. Looking at it structurally, like I don't know that interviewing is the thing that is interesting to us. But we wanted to bring someone in that we can just kind of do the same format, like have a really free form conversation. And so we are bringing our good friend Jens Onso on next week. I have known Jens for close to 20 years. How long have you known him?
I met him at, I'm almost sure it was SHOT Show, not probably 6 or 7 years ago, if I had to guess.
Six or seven,
But
not.
I didn't know him well until the last few years.
Yeah, it's funny how the
Yeah.
industry works in like rotations. I think it's going to be a really fun conversation. I met Jens on the Knife Network. So this is back in like peak forum days, where if you were looking for knife making or EDC content, you were on forums because Instagram did not exist. And Facebook was not really the platform that like most makers were using. It was like you went to forums. His kind of trajectory through the industry, I think, is very familiar to me, which is fun. But he's also ahead of me. You know, he's been making knives longer than me. He's a little bit older than me, but I feel like the process is very relatable. I want to say, I'm gonna have to ask him this. I'm like 99% sure that Jens was responsible for my collaboration with Boker.
I
Which I
didn't know
mean, like
that.
if you look at this, is like what we're always talking about, right? Like rising tide raises all vessels. Like who you know and like the friends you have in the industry can be like responsible for so much like downstream positivity.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I'm excited to talk with him about, you know, the collaborative process, his custom process. He was one of the founding members of Giant Mouse.
From
Those
Denmark.
are,
I don't know if we mentioned that. So
he's a, yep. I'm
he'll
a,
be
it's
tuning
funny,
in.
very late in the afternoon.
Yeah. Early morning for us, late for him.
I would assume that most of you listening like know of Jens either through the custom work, through the production work, or through Giant Mouse. But that's a quick intro, man. I'm super excited. I think it's going to be a fun call.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I remember talking to him at SHOT Show.
Yep.
Remember noticing how tall he was the first time I
It's very tall,
met him.
very tall, very deep voice.
But yeah, really good guy. I actually have a funny story I was going to share, but now that I'm thinking about it, I'm going to share it while he's on. But
Really? I want it
yeah.
now.
Okay. Actually, I already talked to him about it, so I will talk about it now
Okay,
because
do
it
it.
is funny. So, he was ordering some tools that he couldn't have shipped directly to Denmark. Nothing crazy, just like a couple of internet retailers weren't sending international stuff out. So he orders a bandsaw blade and he has it sent to me so I can forward it to him. And it's a 100-foot bandsaw blade and it's just a single strand. It's not like a loop.
Right.
You cut it and whatever,
Weld
spot
it.
weld it.
Yep.
And so I get like 3 or 4 things from Jens. This is like last week. And I'm going to put them all together in one smaller box from these three different shippers so that I can have DHL pick it up to send it to him. And I open the box that had the bandsaw blade in it.
Oh.
And the sleeve or like the coil had exploded in the box. So as soon as I opened the top of the box, I just hear, because the whole thing was like a bird's nest. And then when you open the box, it kind of grows a little bit. And so I'm like, well, that's not going back in any box. So Dalton and I, luckily we have a little bit bigger shop now, but we had to roll the whole thing out like completely in a straight line so that it wasn't twisted anymore, like all the way end to end of the shop, and then like back a ways, and then put a 5 gallon bucket on the ground and like spun it to just coil it back up. It was really funny. Honestly, we were laughing the whole time, but yeah.
Pretty good. I instantly just thought of the difference between metalworking bandsaw blades and woodworking saw blades. I've had so many small blades, like 93 inch blades, like uncoil, or like I'll go to coil it and my handle slip. It's just something weird. I've got one woodworking blade that's like, I don't know, 8 teeth per or 5 teeth per inch or something. And the stakes are so high.
Yeah.
Because it's basically just like ninja stars on a spring.
Yeah.
It's horrible. The metalworking blades are like, you know, 14 teeth per inch. They're friendly.
As soon as I saw that, I'm like, all right, safety glasses, gloves. Because I'm like, I don't know where the other end of that thing is, but it could come out of there at 80 miles an hour.
Did you ever have the like snake in a can?
Yeah.
Like from road trips, you like get a can of peanuts and you open it and rattlesnake pops out.
Yep.
Basically like that, but with saw blades.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So that is coming up next week. If you guys have any questions or anything you want us to run by Jens, you can drop them in the Patreon or you can send them on IG, whatever, but love to have some feedback. So
yeah.
Okay. Look forward to announcement that. Done. Dude, you've been cranking. Let's start with some shop updates.
Yeah. We're starting to catch a rhythm. We had a little bit of a, obviously with the move, a lot of schedules, a lot of our systems got sort of disrupted, but we're really, I feel like, starting to grab another gear and starting to see the effects of the new organization. We had a really good week. We were able to get a lot of knives boxed, and one of our big metrics is that we, you know, print labels every Thursday, and then we can see like how many labels we printed that day with a one, you know, manifest that you take to the USPS. And so those numbers on that manifest of how many got boxed is sort of a, it's not like the end all be all, but it is notable, you know, how many. And had a record week this week, which was fun and awesome and felt really good, just because it has been, you know, a little bit, we're staggered a little bit for a couple of weeks, you know. So we did fall slightly behind on where we would normally be. And so now we're kind of in catch up mode, and catch up is definitely happening, which is what I like to see. So
awesome. Do you feel like this is do you feel like it is leveling out in a way where this is like what you can expect from weeks, or is this still what? Do you ever have those weeks that you're like, I don't know why it was so productive, but this week just happened to be more productive? Or do you feel like this might is like a baseline?
Yeah, honestly, a new normal is definitely happening. That's
okay.
That's a plane above where we were in the other shop. And that's largely because Steven is building all of our sheets now. And so awesome. Because of the extra space, like that gains Dalton one extra day. Yep. And then also with our like quote unquote shipping department now, that day, like there's no way in our previous shop that we could have done this many knives in a day just shipping them, because it just was kind of awkward the way we were doing it, you know. And so slow, and so this is just faster. Like I could have him, Dalton, assembling them, and I'm inspecting them and shipping them at the same time, and that was critical. I mean, without that, it isn't possible what we're doing. So it felt good. It felt like the real deal. And we are prepping big time with making sure those things are all dialed in because of the LT5, which we're right on the edge. I mean, I got the sheath done since our last recording. I finally got the sheath finished up. And so we're just waiting on a few little miscellaneous things, but we could be looking at a launch, like could be anytime within a week to 2 weeks from now.
Are you, if your launch is... Let me think how to ask this question. It ties into another thought. So if your launch is in 2 weeks, are you planning on doing any type of like pre-release, like social stuff. I hate to say advertising because like we don't really think in terms of advertising, but like you think of like interest generation, right? So advertising, I guess. Are you going to do any?
I got to get the knife out once I have like the exact photogenic, like perfect production version. I got to get out and take some photography in the real world. I have noticed I take so much photography of my knives like in the shop.
Yeah.
And this knife in particular really, I feel like needs something different. It needs a campfire. It needs something like that. So I need better photography. That's really the main thing. But to be honest, I think my model for launching new stuff is like to float things out to the existing customers as the first round. You know what I mean? To see if like people that have supported me, if they like it, it's like kind of lean on them to see like, do you like what we're working on?
I really like that actually. It's like an organic, well, it's like there's two stages there, which is being a customer gets you a benefit if you are interested in continuing in the line.
Kind of get the jump on it.
Yep. And then you get to see how people who have already purchased from you like something new. I guess like the weak link in there would be like the assumption that it is multiple, like they've already bought something, so like they may have satisfied like a knife need.
Yeah.
That would be the only like glitch, but I still think as a format, I think that's really strong.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're not trying to have like some big crazy sellout launch, like because we're trying to work the kinks out of production. I'm really feeling happy about the knife, but as you know, there's always like little inefficiencies here and there. So we were totally okay with a slow ramp up on this and email list, you know what I mean? Just like, which is largely existing customers and just people that have signed up on the site. They'll probably be the first to get the drop on it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, of course, Instagram be posting on there, but I, as much as I'd like to do a lot of advertising, like I don't feel like I have it in my repertoire or time.
Yeah.
And so that's where leaning on people on like YouTube and some of my existing customers and word of mouth, like that's kind of where I'm at, unless I'm to the position where I could hire that stuff done. And it just doesn't feel like we're there yet. And so I'm okay with sort of being underwhelming on the marketing side, until it's time to change that up. But you know, I'm focusing on the product itself, and it really is like all I can muster. And so it's like, I have a hard time imagining doing much more.
The second part of that thought was actually, I had just seen a post from Bobby Hundreds. We've talked about him a little bit, like really, really interesting human, very talented in multiple areas, but is one of the founders of the Hundreds, which is like a streetwear brand.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just seen like a post on Threads, I think, where he had basically said like, sure, you can sell out, but can you handle fulfillment? Can you handle, and it was just this like cascading kind of list of the tasks associated with some type of success. One thing that was interesting was a lot of people that commented actually didn't understand the context.
Mm-hmm.
So people saw they saw selling out as like conceptually, like selling out like as a musician or something, right? Like, oh, you sold out. And it's like, no, not that. But this is, I mean, that ties in perfectly, which is like sometimes you're just so in the product that no matter how good of an idea it is to like announce it, tease it, do that, like, you just don't have that.
Yeah.
You know?
And I was pretty aware of that. We put a few Overland Sports like in stock, which we have been trying to do more and more of. And I got my good camera out. I was looking for an opportunity to take some good pictures, but it was raining outside. And I was like, I'm not really a photographer.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'd love to hire this photography done. But I'm like, the knives are sitting on a shelf right now.
Right.
And it occurred to me, I'm like, if people believe in us and I take the best picture I can take with my phone and just post it, like I've got to be okay with that right now until we have the resources to do something different. Yeah. You know what I mean? Cause I know the product is good. Like I'm happy with the product.
Right.
As long as I feel like the photo is decent and you can see what I'm showing you, you know, like, but I look at really good photographers and I immediately, I'm like, I wish all my pictures on all my platforms looked like that.
Yeah.
But I gotta have, you know, be realistic too. It's tough.
I think we might be ready for like a little phase shift. This is a hunch, but I actually, like, how do I relate this to you exactly? Okay. I think that especially with like Meta, we might be coming into a time period where as a brand or as a maker, you are much better off hosting process than product, especially in the knife industry.
Mm-hmm.
One, I don't know the value of static images at this point. Like, it's cool. Things are pretty. Okay. I don't know what movement that does.
Mm-hmm.
I do see the movement around video, which everybody does. How I would relate this to you is I actually think that the amount of stories that you post is super valuable and interesting content. I would like to see you doing those as reels instead of stories.
Good idea.
Because I think that you're already generating the content. You edit, clip it for 90 seconds and then it lives on your page and you're never showing a finished product. One, they're informational. You post a ton of process that is super interesting, right? Like, I'll screen grab stuff because I'm like, oh man, that's such a good idea, but I know it's going to be gone tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you shift that to reels, that starts to give an advertising platform that is super viable.
Mm-hmm.
It's not YouTube probably, which I know you're also focused on, but it's also, this is a minimum. I think like we're dealing with like a lot of minimum maximums.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where like I've found it with social media where like I am having such a hard time interacting with social media. I've got a bunch of content on my phone and like photos and I haven't posted it. And that is like, that to me is really telling.
Mm-hmm.
So reels, and when I'm doing something that is interesting to me has been the easiest way to interact. So yeah. That is, I'm going to make that as a prediction. Okay. I think that a lot of people are going to be really, really upset that their accounts are getting shut down. I think the way around this is to stop looking at final product and start looking at what you can show of your process.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's absolutely valid. I mean, CNC machines, fixtures, lasers, like, cool. Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah.
None of that shows anything that an algorithm can be bummed at.
It makes me think of a phrase.
Hmm.
You know what phrase?
No, why don't you tell us?
It's almost like the process is the product, you know?
I mean, arguably, I mean, you're not wrong, right? And I think driving. Okay. Relate this to like a design principle that I've always had, right? Which was when I do a folder, I've always thought it was more interesting to have elements that make people keep looking, right? If you can like just look and see like everything is the same, like this is it, you like understand it, it's done. If you have design language or elements that like as you rotate a piece, your eyes keep like bouncing off of things and like looking at different things, I think that's incredibly valuable. Where it was valuable was when the majority of my sales came from knife shows and I needed someone to stand at my table long enough to buy a knife.
Mm-hmm.
If you could just automatically look at it, understand it, discount it, and move on, I think that that was less successful than having something where someone's like, oh,
you need some stickiness.
That I think that's where we're at with like social media, where you're like, well, oh, what is this video that he posted?
That's thought provoking.
Like, yeah. It's just another, it's like actually really easy to scroll past another very nice knife.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Less to like, what is this? I'm like super interested in the algorithm and I don't understand it. Like I had posted one video from USN show that was just a line. And it was like 250,000 likes or something like that, or like views. I don't understand. It had to be like the number of faces and then got picked up somewhere and pushed, brought in tons of eyes that were like, why are all these nerds wearing backpacks? And like people that didn't understand what they were looking at.
Yeah.
But it was still like, what is it in there that created that?
I know that. Yeah. The algorithm is man, it's like downright diabolical, like
yeah,
the
it
way it
really
makes
is.
decisions. It's so, yeah, it's weird.
But even like in the last few reels I've posted, the views can swing wildly. And it's like, okay, is it that it starts with a face? Is it starts with a machine? Is it, I don't know.
Yeah, me neither.
But
yeah, that is valid though, reels instead of stories, because if I'm posting it anyway, I might as well preserve
you're
it.
Already doing it. Like
Yeah.
if you legitimately, if you just post the same sections as a reel and then send that to your stories, you get both. You get
That
people
makes
who are
more sense.
casually browsing stories, but you get lasting content.
Yeah. Yeah,
Okay.
I agree with that. No, that's handy. Yeah, a couple people have asked me that, how I'm going to launch it, and I'm like, honestly, haven't even thought about it.
Yeah.
Like
But
I
that
just
is, you don't have to. I mean, you did, because you have a captive audience. Do you have, here's a weird question. Like, do you have a idea of like how many kind of, I don't want to say like loyalists, but like if you were to look at a newsletter or something, like how many eyes you have on something where it's like people are interested. You always hear people say like, oh, at the point where you have like 1,000 dedicated customers, like you're in a very good position as a business, right? Do you have like any concept of like,
I mean, I have a pretty good sized mailing list, but I mean, it'd be very hard to quantify.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is like the Overland Sport has been a very good success for us. It's really been just a strong, it's almost a year now that it's been out and it's just been strong. The LT5 is not targeting those customers. So that's
right.
Why I'm curious. It's very, very interesting to me, because it could be that I need a whole new set of customers for this knife, because it's 5-inch blade versus the Sport is 2.5, 3-inch blade, you know?
Right.
So it's like
Different world.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So I'm prepared for the possibility that like the customers that I have are like, that's sweet, make it smaller.
Right.
And then I know those people are out there that they overlooked the Overland Sport, and now I need to go find them. Which is okay. I'm actually happy with that, because it's like, instead of muddying the same recipe, it's like, try something totally new.
Totally
So
new.
we'll see. I mean, I wouldn't be offended if it's a slow seller and I do have to go out there and find those guys. Like, I'm actually kind of expecting that in a way. So we're going to see.
I think there's value in that type of friction also, which is like, one, if you only do the thing that you know everybody wants, I think you start to lose some kind of interest.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I think there's a value in having to go through the process of like making something successful because you like it. Right. And also not expecting everything to have the same success.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you're going to have products that carry other products. Like I have things that I just like to make.
Yeah.
And maybe they're less profitable from a percentage standpoint. Maybe they don't have as like a popular or like reception, but I like them. And like at the end of the day, if you don't like what you're making, like what's the point? Right.
Yeah, that's valid. And I'm happy with this knife. I've been carrying it on my hip, and I mean, it's not something I'm going to EDC, that's for sure. But like the weather has been pretty bad, but I'm like really looking forward to going out and messing with it in the woods more. I've used it. I've started a couple fires, did some testing, but it's like backyard stuff. Just
how big of a blade do you think you can fit on that handle?
Ooh, probably no more than 6 or 7.
Okay.
Before I would definitely go with some different shapes
You
on the
start
handle.
Or like scaling slightly.
Yeah.
So early on, like when I was fixed blade specific, I had kind of keyed in on like 7 inches as like a really ideal outdoor blade shape, like just what I liked. It's like carryable, but like big enough to do real work with. I love it. We've talked about this before too, which is like for every company that is like, that doesn't sell for us, there is a company that's all they do.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And I think that for me, like the big fixed blade companies are some of the most interesting, because it's what I loved. Like there is something that is just completely primal about, you know, a big fixed blade, you know, 10 inches or something where you're like, yeah, this is this all over the world. This is what people are doing some type of work with, whether it's thin, like a machete or like, you know, a big chopper, like a, like one of the old, like Marine Corps hospital knives, like it's, or, you know, like a parang or a bolo,
a coconut or a block of ice. Like somebody's doing something.
Somebody's doing something with like a big chunk of steel.
Yeah. Yep.
So good. Okay.
No, I'm excited to scale up. With this family of Lost Trip, right?
Yes.
It's possible. I mean, it's, and that's the thing is like, I wanted to have sort of a new sector because I realized our MagnaCut sort of recipe over there, we sort of were pushing towards the top end of size that made sense to me. So I needed a new recipe to go bigger. So it's like, it's, I don't want them to just see laminate like two different product lines right on top of each other, size and application. So we're going to see. I'm excited. But I showed you this. If anyone's following me on Instagram, you would have seen it. But it's a stainless steel drop rig for this sheath. This is one of the, probably the most satisfying things that I came across when I was putting this sheath together.
It's such a dialed piece of like kit for that knife.
Thank you.
It well, and it also fits something you love, like old Militaria.
Yeah.
And it feels like that. It feels like a modern version of something that would have been on a bayonet in like, you know, World War II or something.
Right.
Yeah. Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. It, in a weird way too, it's like extremely right for manufacturing.
Yeah.
And that was what led me to it. And I thought I, because of how efficient it would be to do it this way, I was like, I mean, I'll try it. I might not like it. It might suck, but like, I got to try it first because it is more efficient than Kydex to do it that way. And then I saw
it and stronger like, and like, it just, it's the idea that like, if you have like Kydex, a lot of times it's just all Kydex. Right. And like, there was a time period where it's like, everybody's building belt loops out of it and all these attachments and drop things. And I love that you went that route because it actually feels really intentional. You know, like this is a product. This is this component of the product. It doesn't have to all be the same. I think that's a fun tie-in.
Yeah, I'm excited. I hope people like it. I've only posted a story. I didn't post a reel of it. So I'll have to.
I'd be curious. I'm noticing, like, dude, with reels, I'm noticing actual. It's the only movement I notice on my page in terms of growth. Mm-hmm. Like, I will post photos now, and where I would have gotten, you know, 1,000 likes or something, I get 300.
Yeah.
And now when TikTok I post effect. Reels, yeah, when I post reels, it's, you know, 10,000 eyes on or something like that. Yeah. Like it's enough that you're like, okay, that makes it worthwhile.
Yeah. 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 They're chasing TikTok big time.
It's interesting.
Very.
Like Ben says, man, rented land. It's just all, I think all we can do right now is create diversification, right? So if you have one platform that all your sales are coming from, look at that very hard.
Yeah.
You know, refine your mailing list. Like if you're only using your mailing list, like look at Facebook, like, or start, look at YouTube, like figure out a couple of, you know, I guess like catastrophe management methods. Like if this system goes down, what is next?
Yep. Gotta have eyeballs, man. I've learned that pretty distinctly over the last couple of years that I've been doing this is like eyeballs lead to sales.
Yeah.
And you just need more eyeballs like that. If you have something that you believe in, and at least some people believe in, even if it's a small percentage of people that would ever buy that, like, it's a volume game. It's all about more eyes. And I think that is really the basis. And then you want it when those people, when those eyeballs come through and buy it, you want to impress them. There is a business model where you don't impress anybody and you just get new eyeballs all the time. But if you impress them, that's like you're building the house and the foundation at the same time doing that.
Yeah.
So
it's both. I just had this thought, which ties into this. So recently I had been thinking, I'm like, man, say all social media went down, like not going to happen, but like broad spectrum knife ban, right? My account gets banned because it was related to knives or like something like that. So you have knife shows, okay, and you have local sales. And as modern knife makers, I would say that knife shows play in for some makers more than others, but it's not critical like it was in the 70s and 80s, maybe 90s. Local sales, I would say, are very rare for the majority of makers.
Yeah.
Okay. So one thing that I had thought about, I was like, wow, if I was doing like, we're in Bend, there's a craft fair or some kind of like maker market every weekend, pretty much throughout the year. And I'm like, I could very easily design like a small line of product that I could take physically and go and like sit at a booth. The benefits there are also like, oh, like my kids are around like other makers' kids and like you're meeting people from the community. So there's a lot of like downstream positivity that can come from that. But that led to a thought of knife shows. And if that was the only thing, and I was like, nobody does catalogs anymore. And this is a really weird, like, side, I think like a side effect maybe, which I think I like at this point, I love when a maker has a catalog. I don't love it because he has a catalog or they have a catalog. It's because it feels like it used to. Right? Where you're like, oh, this feel, it feels like vintage. And I think there's this, this interest around some of the way that things used to be. But also then you have like, you have paper that now generates eyes. And it also, I think about collectability a lot of times and you're like, okay, Coca-Cola is really interesting because the breadth of what people can collect.
Yeah.
As a maker, it's like, oh yeah, I have like this catalog from 2024 from like TJ's line in 2024. And there's like this, you know, storytelling aspect of it. And here's the product that was available. Or like Bob Terzuola will post his catalog sometime. Emerson had catalogs. I think that that is actually, from an interest standpoint, I think it would actually be a pretty good idea.
I actually 100% agree. And I hadn't really thought about that until you said that, because CRKT did their catalog. It wasn't really a catalog because they have their sales catalog, but
yeah,
what would they call it? It is like a,
it's basically like a lookbook, kind of, and, I forget what was on the cover, but that's essentially what it is.
Yeah. And it was sort of a storytelling. It was involved with like you and I, when they came out and visited our shop. So there was some of that in there and I really enjoy that.
Yeah.
That thing is,
it's like a magazine.
Yeah. It's it. Yeah. Right? It's a magazine.
And storytelling as opposed to selling.
Yeah. And if there was any way that I could put something like that together from our brand, I would do it in a heartbeat. But holy cow, that's sort of circles back to the like bandwidth thing of,
I think I that goes how. Like that's like umpteenth though, because like as a game, okay, so what does it involve? It involves some like graphic design and layout. Okay.
Photography,
which you're already generating. And again, doesn't necessarily have to be all perfect finish product photography. Okay. So it's like, what's the minimum maximum version of this? So like the minimum is you have some type of paper handout that is cool enough that people keep, like a zine, right?
Yeah.
They're at the show. They pick this up. This is the zine from the show. It's got product in it. I think that's cool. I mean, that's like something that you could probably go on like Fiverr.
Yeah, I was going to say, I need a guy.
That's like you go on Fiverr. Yeah. You're like, hey, here's what I want. I want a 15 page layout. Here's some photos. You go and you do text.
Yeah.
You have, you know, ChatGPT do a rough draft of text for you.
I like that very much.
Just a fun.
I really like that.
I think those are like value adds, but lately I noticed that a lot of the I don't want to say processes, like the additional ideas and concepts around business that are interesting to me have to do with sustainability, like durability and
timelessness,
diversification, legacy, where it's like, I don't know. I realize like how fortunate to be, like how fortunate we are to be in the positions we are with our businesses. And I'm like, I think I think a lot of people like take for granted the ease of which business is conducted at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's for sure.
And I think there's a lot of value in playing the game of like, okay, so this is the game in this setting, right? If I go do a small farmer's market, that means I'm not taking my current product line, because from a design language standpoint and application and price point, it actually doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of value in being able to look and being like, well, what could I leverage my skills into, you know, to be able to work inside of that like envelope.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's very valid. And I become very aware of that. I never thought about it this deeply, but like I've had a couple guys and gals reach out wanting a knife where they heard or saw, or maybe they did get on my website, but they don't use credit cards or they don't use the internet.
Totally.
That like, it's like once a quarter, I'll have a guy be like, hey, can I send you a check? I'll write on paper like what I want. And then I'll like put it in our spreadsheet, like as like a paper order, and then send it to him. And then, you know, he'll call me when he gets it. And he's like, hey man, I really like it. And it's like, how do you reach those people? And like you just said, like catalogs, you know, like paper, there's so much there. And it's not just because people that are older don't use the internet or don't know how or whatever. It's that there's lifestyles out there that aren't so attached to the world that, you know, social media has created, which I admire in a lot of ways. So it's like, how do you make sure you're not just like moving beyond that, you know?
Well, and there's, I think there's a lot of value. Like the area that you're in, if there was some public facing element of the business, there's probably value there.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just for you and your family, because you meet people.
Yeah.
And that, like, we forget, like, social media, like, what's the first word, right? I mean, it's intended to be social, but in a lot of ways it is, I think, divisive, or like it makes it easy just to not actually engage with
it's just people. As antisocial as it is social.
Yeah, totally. Anti-social, it's like maybe media. So maybe that makes it neutral. I don't know. But like, if you were to go to some type of like local event and sell product, you would make a different type of customer.
Mm-hmm.
I talk with Nick Rossi like on a pretty regular basis. And I love like his market is basically like New England craft fairs. His customer mm-hmm. base is different. His product is different. I love that. It's like, I'll see the posts that he makes and like people that he's interacting with, and he's always dealing with like other artists or getting going and teaching. And it's those, I think a lot of those are generated by the face-to-face kind of interactions. And I think at this point, we're so accustomed to like reducing friction in business and like, what's the easiest way to sell product? And like, what is the least amount of time that we don't actually ask, like, if it's the most satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Robust.
Or durable. Like,
yeah.
If you're in an economy, a local economy that can sustain your pricing, man, there's a lot of value, whether it's like meeting a chef who you like sharpen his knives and you go into his restaurant and like on a date night and like you get, you know, hooked up. Like, not that that's the reason, but like, that is a very normal, like, human interaction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say like almost like a local trade, even if it's not even for anything that's of like great value, just the like scratching your neighbor's back, you know,
social itch.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I did this thing. I don't know if you saw it or not. So my buddy Jeremy has a shop called Technique Vehicle Outfitters, and he's super interesting dude. Like pretty intense personality, lot of ideas, lot of excitement, and has always got like something kind of rolling. So they do these like, it's big, like four wheel community, right? So he's super involved in snow wheeling, which is crazy to me, because it's just like a bunch of people going out in like rigs with 40 inch tires in deep, deep snow. And then just like going until somebody gets stuck and then fixing it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
started doing these like big cleanups where they're moving like 300,000 pounds of trash out of public lands.
Mm-hmm.
Recently started doing I think it's like a every couple weeks he's doing like a men's group, right? And the idea is like at this point there's like a lot of like men are feeling isolated, don't have like large friend groups, whatever it is, tying that into some skill building and some like just social, right? He asked if I would come and talk about knives, and I was like, well, yeah, okay, like I can come talk knives. And then I had this idea and I was like, instead of doing that, like what if we just built like knives? And the original concept was I was going to take apart a bunch of knives from like my prototype box and just throw them in bags, and then everybody would kind of have a different knife. It turned into like quite a few people coming. And so what I did was reached out to CRKT. They hooked me up with 25 squids. I bought some of the Scout Tool drivers, had some stuff from Worksharp, and basically showed up to this thing with disassembled knives and toolkits to put them together.
Wow.
Dude, it was so fun.
That's that does sound fun.
It was great. Well, it was really ranging. Oh, and Ben Peterson sent me a big box of his NAFS posters. And it's like, it was awesome. I was like, I want these guys to like come and hang out, but I want everybody to go home with something. I took stuff for kids. Like we've done like kids baseball caps and stuff. We took stuff that they could like take home. But what I thought was really interesting about this was the comfort of people to like ask questions. Also just like watching and seeing like something that we take for granted as we're interacting with all the time being pretty complex if you're not just familiar. And these are like, for the most part, they're like fairly technical, mechanical people, mm-hmm. right? It drove home the idea of like local interaction.
Yeah.
You know, it's like at that meeting, I met one guy who's like, yeah, I do heavy equipment. And he's like, if you ever need to move a machine or like rent equipment, like, give me a call. There was a dude who is, you know, financial planner. There was like, there's roofing guys there. And you just realize like, you don't get that online. And this mm-hmm. was in not a sales platform. This was purely just like doing things side by side, kind of learning some technique. I was like, the amount of value there on a community level is so high.
Yeah. Yeah. That's got me thinking for sure.
Dude. It's pretty fun.
This is going to sound weird, but have you ever watched the Netflix show Loudermilk?
Never even heard that word.
It's like 3 seasons in now.
Okay.
It's really good. It's really offbeat. It's really strange. It's good.
Okay. Loudermilk.
But okay. Talks about, it's just a saga of like basically AA meetings and like hilarity ensues. But in a weird way, Beck and I watched it. We really liked that show. But I remember thinking in a weird way watching that of like, I want to go to an AA meeting.
Right.
And it sounds community. Weird, but it's like, yeah, it's just like, that sounds kind of good, actually. Yeah. And it's like, not, I mean, fortunately, don't have a struggle with that. But I just mean in terms of like the human aspect of that, like watching that, even though it's like totally a comedy, it's just like the thought of that, I'm like, that's interesting.
Yeah,
like
being understood, being in like comfortable environment. And my brain spun out as I did this. I don't know if I would consider it a class, but I guess in like a way it was. Like we started off doing like some questions, and people just had knife questions, like how do they make Damascus, like what mm-hmm. is this mechanism, like what blade shape is best. And you're like, you know, I had Ben's poster up and I was like going over stuff, and it was really fun, right? But then you get into like the side-by-side work thing, right? So basically we grouped into like, we like little tables. I would kind of work with one person to like figure out the process to assemble. And we did the speed safe assisted squids.
Oh yeah.
So like, there's some, like a little bit of complexity.
Yeah.
Right. That one person would then help everyone else at the table.
Yeah.
And then they'd all talk and like, you know, then Jeremy like nerded out and he's like, what's the torque spec on these? And he's like, yeah. he figured out it's like, you know, 3 inch pounds. Like he started doing it. He's like, I was like, just go till it doesn't work and then back off until it works. And he's like, okay, these are all, and it's like, everybody's like going around, like torque specing their pivots.
Yeah. Nice.
It's really fun. But as I was doing it, I was like, this as a format is a way to engage with anyone around knives, EDC, tool maintenance, sharpening. We did like, I brought all of my Worksharp sharpeners out as a Blade U class, super easy. So they come into the class. You've got a couple of designers with designs that people can assemble and talk knives. I was like,
yeah,
that seems like it would be and you leave with a knife.
That is,
tell me that would not crush.
That's pretty excellent.
Right. But also, like this happened to be a men's group. It could be, I would say like high school kids could probably do it. Yeah. You need dexterity and like, you need to be able to listen. Like I would love to do this for like a women's group or like a diverse, like crowd, I think would be really fun because these are things that people just don't have interactions with. And it's like, I look at Ben, I'm like, it's super outdoor, you know, heavy community. People are always like doing things that require knives. So I've thought of like, I've got a few like friends, like female business owners in town. I'm like, is this something that like you would want to do? You know, it's one of those things where like you get asked by a group and then it becomes like, of course, like guys are going to ask to take apart knives. I don't think, I don't necessarily know, like most women are going to think to ask that.
Yeah. Right? No, that's really interesting. I saw the photo from that. I wasn't sure what that was. So I'm glad I got the backstory.
Yeah. So I don't know that, I guess that was like a huge tangent, but it ties into this idea of like it, there is an element that I think the older makers had where you are building, I think they built their businesses in a more robust way than we are. Yeah.
Like the the hammer-ins that you see the ABS guys do.
Perfect example.
Yeah.
Right?
Super interesting.
Well, and those, I mean, that is, those are well attended, happening frequently, right? And I think they're a complete throwback.
Yeah.
I mean, those have probably been going on for 100 years.
Yeah. From a third person view, it's like the Wurtz hammer-in, like Travis Wurtz. Yeah. It's like, it looks to me like Christmas for those guys. Like it's, you can just see the excitement and you can see all the photos like before they're like headed down to the Wurtz hammer-in. And then it's like all the cool photos of them drinking whiskey, hitting hot steel. Yeah. And it's like, man, that's a party. That's cool.
This ties in like another tangent kind of, which is it seems like the forging side, it's harder to make a living than what we do. And I've been like trying to figure this out for a long time. Because it would be really easy to place it on the work. Right. And say like, oh, well, like, yeah, like people don't buy that as much, or it has a smaller like audience. And that might be true in some cases, but like, I also think it's like the way that it is like presented, valued, how people explain it. It's like an interesting, I don't know why I think about this stuff so much. I think it's just, I think it's all related. Like, I don't really see the lines. I see the industry. I see like, if you are making knives, you are making knives. I don't understand why certain portions of the industry are way more profitable, other than maybe like certain practices or like personality types or priorities. Right?
Yeah. There's a lot of ways to make a knife.
Dude.
There's a lot of ways.
So many ways. Yeah. It's really fun.
You mentioned Blade U.
Yeah.
Not to a tangent. They, I'm very blessed to have been chosen to teach one at this upcoming Blade show in Atlanta.
Amazing.
I guess I kept forgetting to announce it, but do you know what the name of the curriculum is?
I have no idea.
Yes, you do.
No, I want you to say it.
The process is the product. Yeah.
When is the class?
I don't know if they've got that far to the scheduling yet.
Okay.
But it's, you know, Blade Show Atlanta this year.
Dude, what a treat. I am also, not to like steal your thunder, I'm co-hosting a class or co-teaching a class with Tom Crine.
Nice.
But like, what a fun thing to be able to like leverage our interest into.
Yeah. I was pretty tickled when they asked that because that sounds fun. It stresses me out, but it sounds fun.
You're going to crush it. And I will attend if there's any way possible. If it's Friday, I can do it.
They might have the schedule. I haven't looked that far into it.
Do you have like, I get nervous like thinking about, I am fine with co-teaching. I am good support. Right now, I am not good at generating a course.
Mm.
I would obsess and stress myself out around that so much. So do you have like a plan of attack?
Generally, yes. I think it's like 45 minutes, right? Something like that. Okay. So I feel like I have the beginning to the class, and because it's so new to me, I am going to have to leave some meat on the bone for like free form. Don't see how I could anticipate their questions and stuff without having ever done this before.
45 minutes. I was almost thinking like 15 minutes of explanation.
Yeah. Like,
and a half structure. An hour of free form.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Because you don't need to over explain like the concepts around it.
Yeah.
But you need to be able to field feedback.
Yeah. And one of the things I would do want to do, I guess I can go into it a little bit, is a little bit of an exercise. So I've been thinking about this exercise for a long time. Like for a couple of years, I was like, how do I best illustrate what I'm talking about when I say process is the product? And I think what I'd like to do is like, if everybody has a piece of paper and a pencil, or just like their phone or whatever, take some notes. If they could write down like what processes, what things do you have in your repertoire or in your direct friendship or professional circles repertoire that is above average, that is good? Like, where are you really good at doing something, or someone you know can help you who's really good at doing something? And I don't just mean like, I know somebody who can do it. No, I know somebody who is the best at that or who is good at that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we're looking for like exceptionalism. Like,
right.
And it doesn't have to be something that you do. It could be something that you have access to. You know what I mean? Some like there's a local business that has a laser cutter that's really just efficient, and they're right there around the block, or powder coat or whatever. And then have them make that list and then look at it. And then get them to go through the mental process of what is that product. So if you're looking at those, like, let's say you come up with three things that you're like, I'm really good at this. Let's say it's graphic design. I've got a friend or coworker who's really good at this. And there's a company around the corner that makes leather pouches that's like really impressive. And it's like, okay, what is that product? Because for me, it's like, when you want to build an exceptional product, you need it to be comprised of exceptional processes. And if you start with the product, you're going to end up with processes in it that are not exceptional.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And so it's like, that is like how I want to approach it, to like illustrate of like,
that's very fun.
Like, cluster exceptional processes and then figure out what the product is. And the product's going to be exceptional because the processes are.
Yeah. And you can do that. You can do that in two ways. Since you're at Blade, like, you could, if they're going to have makers in the room, so they could run a two-stage exercise, which is like of your current product or like what you're making, what are the exceptional elements, or like where does your network tie into this? And then if someone's there and they're not making anything, you can still tie that process in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, that's really, really cool.
And the case example I want to use is that folding comb that I used to make. I used to be obsessed with the idea of making knives, but I couldn't get traction enough to where I like could buy a CNC, and like, I didn't have a big shop really. I just had a grinder, and I was like, I just want to make something that does something that like folds. And I'm like,
mechanism.
Yeah. And I'd had even like folder parts, water jet cut, and then just kind of struggled, like didn't really get my feet under me. And I was like, okay, you know, there's a laser shop. I'm good friends with the owner. He can laser cut something. My dad can cut anything out of leather. And that was, that comb was exactly that. And that was the first time I ever did that, where I was like, exceptional things around me, pour them into one thing. What is that thing? And the comb was like, oh, it's a, I can make a comb because I don't have to heat treat it. I don't have to grind a bevel. I don't have to sharpen it. I don't have to, it doesn't have to lock. That was actually the main thing.
Huge.
Is I was like, if it has to lock, it needs a ton of precise geometry and it can't be leather. So I was like, what's not dangerous to be folding? And that is what led me to think about a comb.
Yeah.
And it's like, that was the business that carried me for years. You know what I mean? Yeah. Was like,
well, and you bridged like the chasm. And that's, we've talked about that quite a bit, which is if you have perfectionist tendencies, it's so easy to just like get analysis paralysis almost, or like just not be able to, and it's like, no, 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 you don't have to get there. You just have to make a thing and sell that thing.
Yeah.
That is 90% of actually just bridging the gap. Now you're moving.
And the only way I depart, classically, when you hear that, a lot of people say, it doesn't matter how good it is, just start.
Right.
Whereas where I depart from that is like, you can start really good.
Totally.
But you may not be making the thing that you think you were going to make.
100%.
You know what I mean? So it's like, if you want a fast start and deliver like an exceptional thing, figure out what that thing could be. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, and maybe it's something very simple. Maybe even the comb is, maybe, you know, maybe it's you're handing out, I don't know. You know, I would have to see the list.
I love when phrases that are commonplace become very relatable. So like that ties in, like object in motion stays in motion.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, once you're making a thing, you're making things.
Yeah.
Before you make a thing and sell a thing, that gap is huge. You're static.
Yeah.
Dude, that's very fun.
Yeah. So I hope that engages them. And then I do think it's like, I could soak up a ton of time by asking if anyone wants to share their list and what they were thinking. You know what I mean? So it could turn into a pretty extensive sort of back half hour of navigating those lists. But before I have them do that, like I said, it, like you said, I was going to lay out like a little bit of a framework of like, what am I even saying when I say that? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, the.
Can I throw you a curveball?
Go ahead.
Okay. Don't let people use their phones. Okay. Go analog, go paper.
Yeah, that's probably right.
Can you create a document? Because the way that you think is pretty unique, I think, in certain ways, and your organization is really good. Can you, like, if you were to hand someone a piece of paper that basically it's like a fill in the blanks of linking, is there an easy way that you could do that? And then that's the paper that they get,
like a worksheet, as opposed
kind
to
like
just
a worksheet.
Yeah.
And then that is cool looking and has like Schwartz design on it.
No, that's interesting.
And then they get a rad Schwartz design ballpoint pen.
No, I hadn't thought about that. A worksheet. No, that's interesting. Worksheet. I like
and then you have to have process as the product stickers.
I got to get a process as the product shirt made too before I go down there. I've been thinking about that, but I don't
so
know.
Bad, man. It's we're like finishing. We did apparel drop, pre-order. That is coming in. Dude, you never know like what's coming down the line. So we got a huge order in with our screen printer, and then our screen printer lost their commercial space. They'd been in there a year, found out they were subletting. By the owner
found
company,
out they were subletting.
Found out they were they basically the subletting was unsanctioned.
Oh geez.
They thought everything was up and up. It was not. The owner gave them 30 days to get out. And like, we're in a busy city that's like, commercial space can be hard to find.
That's tough.
So we have taken money, we have order in, they lose their shop. He's a hustler and he's a super good dude, and he found a shop very quickly and is like back up and running. And like, we've got product in with another printer and his product is still coming first.
Yeah. That's
which
impressive.
Is awesome.
So right there, that's on the list.
It's on the
list. When you find that guy or that gal or that business or that corporation that like, they're good.
They're good.
Find a way to put them in your product. Like that's what I'm saying.
Dude, I love it. Okay, I need a stack of the worksheets. Speaking of your process, so I've been doing your a little bit of your method of laying out weeks. And so what I've found, and this is like true for me in almost all cases, the value is the Monday for me. The rest of my week, I can't do it the way you're doing because I have so many more product lines.
Mm-hmm.
I can't actually spend as much time focused on the days, but the Monday is freeing up space through the rest of the week. So like first week I did it, it took me 2.5 hours to reconcile QuickBooks. The next week it took me 15 minutes.
Exactly.
And I have a better eye on like my P&Ls and like what's going on.
Yeah.
That's just a best practice. Shipping or ordering materials. The other one is correspondence with ADHD especially. I can get into these loops where like I can't respond to emails. I can't like reach out. It's really for even like people I really want to talk to, like I just can't break like the barrier. Knowing that I do that on Monday has made it to where I'm actually like pushing projects forward where there was gaps in communication.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the week is trickling down. Like I'm basically allotting Tuesday and Wednesday is really focused production. I still haven't figured out where to get the Kihon in. I'm doing too much. I know it. But regardless, like that process is a pretty big gain in like a certain type of efficiency.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so another way I thought of it is like, you know, the make your bed argument.
Yeah.
Of like make your bed and then the rest of the day goes 10 times better.
Yep.
You can scale that to a 1 week thing. So it's like the Monday morning is the make your bed moment for the week.
Oh,
and
have you ever seen Up in the Air?
No, I haven't.
Need to watch it. It's fantastic. You have this backpack. It's great, man.
It's a movie.
It is a movie. It's George Clooney. He is a like self-help, like productivity guy.
Like cringy type or like
no. He's actually really good. Well, and I'll give you like a quick roundabout, but his job is like going into corporations and firing people. Okay. So that's his job. I like
the premise.
He's like a hired gun that comes in and like tells you all of the opportunities you're going to have because you no longer have this one. It's brutal. His side hustle is around this, like doing TED talks around like self-help, but like, dude, you're pretty good at like the efficiency and like self-help stuff. Like if you really think about it, like process improvement, which is something that in our industry doesn't really exist. The talk that you are giving at Blade is fully like an optimization / like it's self-help, but like improvement.
I hope
that's pretty rare.
I hope it pans out well. I do know it's going to look a little bit odd on the registry because it's a little bit more philosophical. Not totally. I want it to be practical, but it's not like how to sharpen a knife. You know what I mean? Totally. It's not like literal, you know?
Well, the class that Tom invited me to do with him is basically like table game, show game, like sales at a show, which is like his method and my method are different, but we're both very good at it.
Yeah.
And so it's the same thing though. Like if you don't know us,
so walks up, you got to stare him down. You got to intimidate. Dude, no, I'm just kidding.
Tom's table. So like mine is strategic. Tom's is human.
Mm.
I am an introvert. Tom is not an introvert. Tom remembers like we've had tables next to each other for, I don't know, 17 years. He'll remember like my customers' kids' names. Like he's so good interpersonal. He's the kind of maker that if you are walking across the aisle and you're like on the other side, there's a very good chance he's going to snag you somehow and you're going to end up talking to him at the table.
That's cool.
I don't have that skill set, right? But I can build a huge group of people at my table.
Yeah.
Different. So I think it'll be really fun, but it's the same kind of thing. Like, it's philosophical.
Yeah.
It's like, how are you interacting? What are your skills?
Yeah. It's psychology in a weird way.
Yeah.
Packaged in a certain way.
Yeah. That's, if I tried to do what Tom did, I would fail at it. It's not my nature.
For you.
Yeah. You got to find what works for you. And you have to like look at it and be like, well, my weakness is your weakness can't be the focus. It's like, you know, that's like, we talk about that with social media too, where you're like, okay, you just have to find the way that you can.
Well, that's like, I've used the phrase you said on this podcast quite a bit, where you're like, don't fight a weak position.
Yeah.
Find a better position.
That's
a classic example of that, of like,
yeah,
if you're not the extrovert,
yeah,
don't be the guy trying to make jokes with everybody. If you're just not good at that, like, accept that, I guess.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is they reached out about that course asking, they're like, they wanted me to teach Toyota lean manufacturing, like the Kanban thing.
Interesting.
Which I can respect. I can see the value in that. And I do, because they started with that ask, I want to use that as a classic example of what I'm saying. So I'm going to describe that process and the value of it as part of, as one of the like macro examples of this
large
at work.
Scale.
Yeah. But when they asked me that, I was like, they were asking me to teach about that. And to me, it was like, it's a disservice in a way to focus on that, because the reason that I would do that, I implement that, is because of the bigger philosophy. And so it's like, you'll arrive at those same conclusions with having this bit like bigger macro mentality. Whereas like, if you just learn the manufacturing Toyota lean, it's like, why though? You know what I mean? Where did that come from?
There's something else in there that I think is really cool, which is being asked to teach something that feels intrinsic to you is really special and really nice. And it like that. So the fact that they asked you to teach something that you're familiar with, but you are so close to that thing and knowledgeable that you actually know where the shift is. And I don't know that I've ever experienced that until I did the men's group, where somebody asked me to do one thing and I was able to see an adaptation that would be better. And there was no stress around it, because it's like, well, yeah, I can actually just go and like talk knife history and like manufacturing and all these things. And there was like no stress. There was almost no preparation, you know? It was flow. You're just like in it.
Pretty easy to talk about something you believe in. It's like you literally stew in it all day, 365 days out of the year.
Yeah.
And then it's like, talk about it. If it's hard to talk about, maybe it's not exactly what you should be teaching.
Maybe it's not the thing. And like, that's the weak position. Cause I've never thought of myself like as a teacher. And this made me kind of realize, I was like, oh, maybe it's just like, I'm going about it the wrong way. Like, yeah, if I have to do a bunch of preparation and like paperwork, I'm not going to do well.
Yeah.
It's going to create anxiety and stress. Yeah. It's overdefined.
Yeah.
If you give me space to like come in and just do this thing and have fun, I was like, there was no drain on the backside, which for me coming into a large group of people and having to interact, a lot of times there is. And I found that so interesting. And like, the only thing I could think was, it was just like, oh yeah, cause it was a comfortable topic in an area of expertise and it was all good.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it speaks, and using your example in this case, like, I think it speaks to a level of mastery that is really satisfying. As a maker, it's like you are so familiar with these concepts and are so comfortable with them that you're able to like look at it, adapt, and apply.
I hope so. I hope it comes across intelligible.
Yeah,
but I definitely want to check out you and Tom's deal.
Ours is Thursday night.
Thursday. Ooh. Before the show.
Before the show.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't bought my flight yet, so I'll factor that in.
Hopefully everybody in the class changes their table game and then hopefully it works.
Yeah, that does make sense to do it before the show. Yeah.
That is pretty fun. Well, you know, like we were talking about like shows earlier. Like if you're a completely online maker, there's a good chance that you actually don't know how to handle yourself at a table, which is weird, you know? And if you're a young maker, like you're not at the point where you and your wife can sit behind the table and read books and like give people dirty looks.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to hustle a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fun. Okay. Dude, I think I just like hit the wall. That was a lot of, that was a lot of ideas.
Meandering, but in great ways. I enjoyed that.
Super fun. Okay. So guys, next episode, we will have Jens Anso on the pod. Send us questions if you are curious about anything.
Yep. Jens next week, and catch us at Blade U in June. First week
in
of June.
June. Yep.
Atlanta.
All right. Thank you for listening. Leave us a review. Send us to a friend. Appreciate you.
Thank you all. Peace.